Now the dust has settled, we take a look at the Champions League draw and England's squad announcement ahead of the Euros. Plus, why Sam is hoping to dampen the mood in his hometown. All that and more on today's show. Hello and welcome to the Betting Expert Football Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Jenkins, joined as ever by Betting Expert's football editor, Mr. Sam Ingram. How are we doing, mate?
Hello, yeah, I'm good, thanks, Dan. Another great weekend of football just behind us. I'm not sure if I'm looking forward to the international break, but I am ready to endure it.
Yeah, I think endurance is the key word here. Another week without domestic football, which we're all going to miss so much. So I do want to take a look at last week's tips, while we can draw on the memory of club football while we still got it. You had Lincoln City to beat Bristol Rovers. Now that was about as comfortable as it gets, Sam. Bet was settled inside 20 minutes. Got to be happy with that.
Yeah, of course. 5-0 Lincoln. Joe Taylor's 19th minute goal had this ticked off with Bet365's early payout with minimal fuss. Really comfortable in terms of how bets go. It's another commanding performance from Lincoln, who have now hit 5, 6 and 5 goals in their last 3 matches whilst keeping a clean sheet in 7 of their recent 10 outings. So clearly one of the form teams in League One. Really impressive stuff. Playoffs for them is a real possibility now for at 4.33 on Bet365. They're just 2 points off Stevenage in 6. So it's definitely one to consider.
You're not taking it though? Not quite
not
there.
Today.
No?
Not today.
Okay, say that for next week.
Maybe soon.
Okay. You also had over 2.75 goals in Luton versus Forest. That one finished 1-1. A major outlier in Luton's recent matches, I think it's fair to say. So what do you think of that one, Sam?
Yeah, of course it's, you know, of course it's come.
Yeah, just the one you backed, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, close to half profits here, but ultimately a loser. Mengi scored from a corner for Luton in the first half, but it hit his hand before he put it in the net, so rightfully disallowed. Forest had 1.98 XG, and they'll feel aggrieved they've not won the game after being in front for an hour in what was a really big clash at the bottom of the table. In terms of the bet, yeah, just not to be on another day. Could have had 3 goals, could have had 4.
Yeah, unfortunate. You also had over 2.75 goals in Burnley versus Brentford. Now, this one finished 2-1, Burnley, so we get the half win. With the Asian goal line at 2.75, we're essentially splitting the bet in half, betting half of our stake on over 2.5 goals and the other half on over 3 goals. Now, because we saw exactly 3 goals in the match, the over 2.5 half of the bet won, but the over 3 half of the bet pushed and the stakes are returned, hence the half win. Quite amazingly, considering the match. What did you think of that one?
Well, I was more confident with the Luton game, actually. Okay. The Luton bet. So it's funny, you know, it's funny how it turns out. I saw David Fofana miss an open goal on match of the day from about 2 yards out. He shanked it wide of the post. If you've not seen it, please go and watch it. It was genuinely harder to miss. He could do that another 100 times and only miss once. So yeah, I saw it on match of the day, probably about 11 o'clock. I considered getting my kit on. Yeah, going for another run.
Another run in the rain sort of miss, wasn't it?
I thought it was probably not wise at that time. So yeah, I think this falls into the category of unlucky to only get the half win, but we'll take it. It's, you know, profit.
Yeah. The highlight of my betting week was my both teams to score ACCA in all 4 Premier League matches, which didn't win because good old overperforming XG Spurs failed to find the back of the net after generating 2.31 in that 3-0 defeat to Fulham. Sorry. Not ideal.
That is grim. Probably out of all the Premier League like lineup, you'd probably have Tottenham as one of the most likely to score at least 1 goal
usually on
the weekend. So, well, that's usually how it works out, isn't it? You know, just the one letting you down. Before we get on to something I want to bring up, I know we've got serious business to attend to, but before we get into the meat and drink of the pod, I've got a question I'd like you to think about.
Okay.
Following the Liverpool versus Man United FA Cup game at the weekend, is Ahmad Diallo's red card against Liverpool on the weekend the best red card ever? When I say the best, that's open to interpretation. That could insinuate maybe being sent off for the best, worst tackle of all time or the most cynical sending off. Maybe if you save your side from an almost certain goal, etc. For me, it might not take gold, but it's right up there for completely different reasons with Luis Suarez against Ghana. Like that was so brilliantly evil. Like it almost looked scripted after it worked out in their favour. And it was played by the most perfect footballing villain who kind of skipped down the tunnel with glee moments after. And if you've not seen Diallo's red, by the way, he scored to make it 4-3 in the last minute of extra time, sending his side to a Wembley semi-final. Against United's fierce local rivals, he daftly then took his shirt off for a second yellow in the chaos that ensued, and then headed to the changing room to a standing ovation, passed his shirt to a fan amidst like rapturous applause. And I imagine after that, he was greeted warmly when the rest of the United squad left the pitch too. And he'll actually serve his suspension against Brentford in the Premier League. So he will be available for the semi-final against Coventry. So yeah, what do we think, Dan? Was this like one of the best rare cards ever? I can't really recall many getting that kind of response after being sent for an early bath.
Yeah, it was right up there. I mean, it wasn't a red card specifically, but it reminded me of Theo Walcott scoring for Arsenal in an FA Cup match against Tottenham, North London derby, obviously. He may have scored two, but then I think he did his ACL after, or he broke his leg, got a serious injury after it, and he went off on a stretcher, just like taunting the Tottenham fans. That he had his fingers up with the scoreline. It just reminded me of that.
I remember that.
Yeah, it's good. On red cards, I mean, I'm glad you brought up Suarez because I do love pettiness in football. Mm-hmm. So I think my pick would be Mourinho's Madrid getting a few players sent off in a Champions League match. If you remember, I think is Ramos and Xabi Alonso both got sent off just so
sounds about right. Ramos involved.
Yeah, yeah, they just get their suspensions out of the way in the group stage, ready for the knockout tournament. So, gotta love the pettiness. So yeah, on your tips, I didn't mention it there, so I do want to bring it up. But overall profit figures right now, looking at 0.93 units overall, if we're staking one unit per bet. Happy with that? I mean, there's one open as well. You're Jared Branthwaite to make the England squad. That's open at the moment, so
I think it's not.
Yeah, you know,
It's not ideal. Like to get that up a little bit more, but look, we're just starting out. I'm sure come the end of the season that will look a little bit better. So yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So let's move on to a bit of a general discussion. I do want to talk about the Champions League draw as well. We didn't really have a chance to discuss it since the draw was made. Now the dust has settled. So it looks like a fantastic draw on paper with some top quality matches. The thing I found interesting and perhaps a little bit annoying was that all four of the pre-draw favourites were put on the same side. So does that open up any value bets for you?
Yeah, I mean, if we look at the other side of the draw, away from City, Real, Arsenal and Bayern, Atletico Madrid opened at evens to get the better of Borussia Dortmund in the first leg. That was something to take on. I'll put together an early bird preview for the game on Betting Expert with the 0.5 Asian handicap as the standout bet in that to win the first leg. That has since gone. I think you can get them around 1.8 now, which may still be a play, but obviously not as attractive as it was. For me, at the Wanda Metropolitano, it's going to be really difficult to trust Borussia Dortmund as a punter. I wouldn't go near them away in Madrid, that's for sure. If Atleti can take a lead to Germany, I'd expect them to see it through to the semis, where they'd give PSG or Barca a game, definitely. Whilst we're on this topic, Dan, I don't want to bring the mood of the pod down, but I'm not sure if... Did you watch Atletico Madrid versus Inter?
Not really, no. I didn't.
Okay, that was in the last round. But I mean, it's getting to a point now where I can't watch Atletico Madrid in the Champions League, because every single televised Atleti game, especially in the latter stages of the tournament, it's just 90 minutes of the commentators like eulogising about Diego Simeone, like literally giving a running commentary of his actions on the sidelines, speaking about how he's kicking every ball and how his team's like an embodiment of himself. Like literally every 5 minutes is constant. And I get that he's cut from like a different cloth in terms of manager profile, but it's just too much for me. It's been happening
like an
for years.
Animal, don't they?
It's been happening for years, and I don't know. It's just really off-putting, and I really want to watch Atleti versus Dortmund when it's on. I may have to watch it on mute. I don't know, but yeah, I'll tell you what. When the Champions League rolls back around in April, watch the game, keep an ear out. If you're listening and you're not really too sure what I'm going on about, just tune in. And you'll probably come away knowing like what Simeone had for dinner, where he was born, how big his feet is, etc. It's just,
sometimes. Unfortunately, because of the scheduling, it's the same time as PSG Barcelona, so I probably won't even watch it then.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. That gets me out of it.
Yeah.
I do.
So
why have they done that, Bolo? I have no idea.
Just put one 2 hours before. Just
surely. All different days or whatever you have to do. That's weird. Annoying.
Yeah, it's always the same when it gets to the quarterfinals. Mm. Doesn't make any sense to me. So on the draw, City, the big favourites versus Real Madrid. I mean, Atletico are the favourites versus Dortmund, but I think the other two ties are the interesting ones. They're absolute pick-ems, Sam. So, you know, pick-em. Arsenal versus Bayern. What are your thoughts?
Arsenal 1.75 to qualify. Bayern at evens. Arsenal clearly in better form, but lacking experience at this level. Bayern Munich at present are the complete opposite. Lacking form, but possessing experience in abundance at the highest level in Europe. Sometimes it's that experience and know-how that is enough to edge it in these circumstances. No one really gave Porto much of a chance going into that second leg. The bookmakers certainly didn't, but they were smart. They had the game plan, executed it well enough to get to penalties. And you could tell it was a group that wasn't fazed by the occasion. And it will be the same against Bayern, but with much, much better players individually and collectively. They don't have the Bundesliga to worry about now either, really. There's not many times they could approach a Champions League quarterfinal in years gone by and be able to say that. And not that I can remember anyway. Arsenal facing a Bayern Munich team fixated on the Champions League should be a worrying thought for Arsenal supporters. And this won't go down well sitting across from you, but I think Bayern might get the job done. It all depends on the lead, if any, that Arsenal can harness at the Emirates. I get the feeling that Bayern will be too strong in Munich for the second leg. And if you are of the same thought process, which the majority won't be considering what we've seen in the Premier League in 2024, but I'd perhaps wait until after the first leg to take a pro-Bayern qualify angle. That is, of course, if you think Arsenal are likely to take an advantage into Munich away. As an Arsenal supporter, Dan, what's the general consensus? Do you think you'll have enough to get to a Champions League semi?
I think trauma was the word that came to mind when the draw was made. I mean, they were drawn against Bayern Munich, I think, 4 times in 5 years, a few years ago. Played them something like eight times in the space of 5-6 seasons. And maybe 1-2 out of 8, obviously culminated in that 10-2 aggregate defeat, which, trauma, Sam. That's the word. Trauma is the word of the day. But looking at, I saw the squads that played that match, and it's absolutely night and day compared to what Bayern Munich are going to come up against for Arsenal. David Ospina in goals. Skodran Mustafi in midfield. Granit Xhaka is the sole six in that team. Yeah, it's a different core to this Arsenal team, and they are built a bit differently. I just think that with so many matches to come in the Premier League that are of perhaps more importance, with that title race, maybe some of the fringe players not being up to the same standard as the starting players for Arsenal, they may let this one slip. But I do think they'll win in North London. I don't think Bayern are allowed to take any supporters to the match, from what I've read.
Are they not? That's first I've heard. How come?
Stadium ban, I think, from Pyrotechnics or something. But yeah, I don't think. I think it's going to be all Arsenal at the Emirates. But then, different task away from home. Yeah.
Definitely. Looking at the other quarterfinal, then finish off your question. City versus Real Madrid, probably City. Bit boring, but you have to favour them. It certainly won't be straightforward. We know that. The bookmakers have Real at 2.62 to qualify, City at 1.44. They're also favourites to win inside 90 minutes in Madrid. In last year's semi-final between the two sides, Real Madrid were 3.30 underdogs to City's 2.17. So the pricing shouldn't come as a big surprise. That match ended 1-1. Obviously, City went through to play Inter in the final and subsequently won. This year, it's Real Madrid at 2.87 in the first leg in the Bernabeu and City priced at 2.30. So, no big surprises there. I think City probably just edge it.
Yeah, probably game in Manchester being key. I mean, I remember watching that one last year, 4-0, wasn't it, to City at the Etihad. It was, they were just physically dominant, I think, in that
too
match.
Good.
They, yeah, far too good for Real Madrid. But I don't think Real Madrid and Carlo Ancelotti helped themselves with the lineup in that match. They should have. They seem to have a lot of key players sitting on the bench, whether that was through injuries or whatever. I can't really remember. But I think Madrid are a better side right now. So I don't think it'll be... I'm not expecting a 4-0 at all. Maybe City are a little bit worse off as well right now than they were last season. So I'm expecting that one to be a little bit closer. But
I'm intrigued to see how Bellingham gets on as well. Obviously a really, really big match coming back to England. That should be interesting.
That should be. He's played against City as well, of course. He played for Dortmund against them, scored against them. They got ruled out ridiculously a few years ago. I remember that one going in. But PSG versus Barcelona, any other match? We've seen this fixture a fair few times in recent years. What do you think of it this time around, Sam?
Tough one to call, Dan. Yeah, I mean, Xavi announced his that he'll be leaving at the end of the season, and since then, oddly, this Barca side is looking semi-competent. Just dispatched Napoli in the round of 16, then went on to beat Atletico Madrid at the Wanda at the weekend, which was their first home defeat of the season in Spain. So hitting a bit of form right now, just at the right time in terms of the Champions League. But despite all that, I wouldn't really trust them from a betting point of view. Far from it. And alternatively, can you trust this PSG side? They got the better of Real Sociedad in Spain after a first leg win at home, but I can't really shake that Newcastle performance at St. James's Park from my thinking. I know Luis Enrique got it wrong in terms of how he set up, but yeah, I just think this is one to avoid in the 1x2 or the to qualify markets anyway. For me, I just don't think you can trust either PSG or evens to win in the first leg at home. Barca at 3.50. The Parisians edged the to qualify market too at 1.75, with Barcelona at evens, which is the same pricing structure as Arsenal versus Bayern Munich. I don't know. At those prices, I'd probably just stay clear.
Yeah, it's PSG's record away from Paris, isn't it? I think they only had 1 point away from home in the groups coming up against Newcastle, AC Milan and Dortmund. So I think we'll learn a lot from that first leg, won't we, in Barcelona?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so.
Fantastic. Right, moving on. I do want to follow up on our discussion last week with the England squad. Obviously, it's been announced by Gareth Southgate in the meantime. We weren't really sure how well that episode would age when we put it out, Sam, with the announcement coming the day after. But I think it's fair to say we're on the right side for most of them. Jared Branthwaite got the call up, as did Kobbie Mainoo eventually, which was music to my ears. But so do you think either or both of those guys will be on the plane to Germany in the summer?
Should we begin with Jared Branthwaite, shall we? Obviously,
yeah,
I'm going to start there. I'm feeling semi-smug.
Sitting forward on your seat.
With him
one,
now, yeah. Perking up a bit. He's now 1.6. Obviously, the job's not done in terms of the bet. He's now 1.66 to be on the plane for the Euros. We took him at 3.25 just before Southgate announced his squad on Friday. So he's going to be in and around the squad for Brazil and Belgium friendlies. Clearly a huge boost to his chances to be on the plane in the summer. I think he'll impress at St. George's Park, I'm sure. And I'd imagine he gets some minutes this international break. Southgate will want a look at him close up. Perform well here and he has every chance. And speaking of smugness, actually, as you say, Kobbie Mainoo got a late call up after his display against Liverpool. Dan's actually sat here with a smirk on his face for any podcast listeners. But yeah, are you happy with that? I'm guessing, Dan,
with my 12.0 pick back in I can't remember what it was, last year, I think. Yeah, I'm happy with that. Definitely happy with that. His odds have plummeted. I think he's down to about 1.73, 1.6 across various bookmakers. So
nice.
Yeah, well, feeling quite smug as well.
It's deserved though, isn't it? And fair play to Southgate, by the way. He gets a lot of stick, maybe some of it unwarranted, but he's clearly watched the Liverpool game and thought, you know what, I've probably made a mistake here. Let's at least get him in, see what he's about. Well, that is, unless someone's injured that we don't know about, and if so, I take all that back. But England are crying out for someone with that skill set in the midfield. He was brilliant. Definitely. At the weekend, so comfortable in possession. And he's just another supremely talented English football player on this ever-increasing conveyor belt of talent. And I really hope he goes to Germany. And you know what? I hope he starts against Serbia. Royce, yeah. Mainoo, Bellingham, Southgate might have other ideas.
Perfect
but
midfield
that's,
three, I think.
That's not bad at all. I'd say it's like a real nice blend of genuine quality, fearlessness throughout the thirds, and I'd love them to line up in that three, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen.
No, I'm smug, but I'm also a bit sceptical because I said last week that Gareth Southgate has in the past used the international break before a major tournament to kind of try players, test players out, give them a run out, and then had no intention of really calling them up to the squad. And my advice at the moment is to be wary of this market. Bear in mind the squad sizes have been reduced here at 2024 down to just 23 players. And I counted yesterday, there were 30 players available at an under evens price on one bookmaker or another, with plenty of variety in the prices. So yeah, my advice is to be wary. I think basically the squads are going to be two players per position plus three keepers. So players who can turn out in multiple positions should be important to managers here. I mean, are there any other options in the market at the moment, Sam? Dare I say Mason Mount at 15.0?
Oh, bloody hell. I really hope not. Southgate adores him, actually, doesn't he? But there's no way.
Played against Liverpool, didn't he?
Yeah, there is no way on earth he makes my squad for the Euros, if I'm going to be totally honest. Looking at the list in front of me, the one that really stands out, there's not many, is Ivan Toney at 2.10. That implies the bookmakers think there's a 47-48% likelihood that the Brentford striker makes the plane for Germany in the summer. Now, if you think about it logically, I struggle to see how they've come to that conclusion, ending in like Toney being more likely to not make the squad. If we're thinking of that Southgate takes three strikers, which I think he will, three centre forwards, like we said, like I said last week, for me, it's Kane, Watkins and Toney. He is the type of player you can depend upon, really high pressure situations, great from the penalty spot. And with 10 or so games left with Brentford in the Premier League, his club needs him to survive the drop. He's playing for a spot at the Euros in his first international tournament, and he's also playing for a move in the summer. If he can get on the pitch at the Euros and prove his worth, that might add another 10 million to his price tag or so, get him to an even bigger, even better club. And that's probably how he's thinking, given the type of character he is. And I know there'll be people turning their nose up at a 2.10 outright punt that's going to take a few months to pay out, but that is right up my street. So if we can, Dan, I'd like to lock that in. 2.10, Skybet William Hill, it's 1.90 on Bet365 an outright bet for the pod.
As an outright bet for the pod. I mean, yeah, we'll find out the result of that tip on the same day that we find out with the Jared Branthwaite one last week. So yeah, happy to lock that in.
I do.
Joe, just so I'm clear, you're staying away from Mount at 15s.
No bet on Mason Mount in this podcast.
So I do want to move away from the England chat and take a look at one of the closest championship tables I can remember. I mean, that meme's been going around for a while about sixth place Norwich being closer in points to the relegation zone than the automatic promotion places. It's no longer the case, but it's still pretty tight in there. Sam, it feels like it's the top three, Southampton, everyone other than Rotherham, and then Rotherham. Like that's the tier list of the championship at the moment.
That's basically it. Yeah, it's beautifully poised at the top end of the championship and delicately, if not precariously, balanced at the bottom. We've gone from the question being peddled in December of whether Leicester will break the championship record points tally to will they even win the league? And if you listen really carefully, there are faint murmurs coming from Ipswich of whether Maresca's Leicester will even clinch an automatic promotion spot. Leeds and Leicester are level on 82 points. Leeds are top on goal difference, but Leicester have a game in hand. Ipswich are 1 point behind Leeds and Leicester, having played a game more than Leicester in second. And as a lover of the championship, someone like eager to drink in the drama of the 46-game season whenever I can, this for me is just simply brilliant. And the period following the international break, the business end, or however you want to coin it, is going to be crammed with twists and turns at any given opportunity. None of the three leading clubs, interestingly, play each other in the final eight or nine games, but they do all play Southampton in fourth, who can beat anyone in this division on their day. Leeds last lost a match in the championship 14 games ago. They haven't lost a home game all season, drawing four and winning 15. Leicester have won once in their last five. No one would have predicted that a few months back. And Ipswich steadily keeping pace. They've been there all season long. Ipswich have won 8 of their last 9 matches. They've scored 18 goals in their previous 5 games at Portman Road, including a 6-0 schooling of Sheffield Wednesday outfit, who, on paper, you'd have thought might make life difficult for them last Saturday. But what we were witness to was nothing of the sort.
Yeah, we've come a long way from the will Leicester City break the championship record points total discussion from earlier in the season, haven't we? So let's move away from that, Sam. Take a look at the other end of the table. From Sunderland in 12th with 48 points, there are 10 points separating them from Sheffield Wednesday in 23rd, who is second from bottom, on 38. What's going on down there?
The bottom of the championship is crazy. Like, let's discount Rotherham, who are rock bottom and will be heading to League One. 10 points separate 12th and 23rd with just 8 games left. Like, wow. That, and I'll very quickly work through it. We've got Sunderland and Watford 12th and 13th on 48 points. Bristol City 47. Swansea City fresh off a big South Wales derby win. That's for you, Dan.
Thank you
on
very
47.
Much.
Millwall on 43, which is 4 points from the Swans. And that's the biggest point gap from 12th to 23rd in the Championship's bottom half. Then we've got Blackburn 42, Plymouth and Stoke 41, QPR 40, Birmingham and Huddersfield 39, and Wednesday on 38 in 23rd position. So they're all really tightly bunched together. And if you go on any kind of run, any of these clubs, either positive or negative, their season's going to be dramatically flipped on its head. There's a cohort of clubs down there where fans will be adamant that they're on their way down. From 23rd all the way up to 17th, 7 places, they'll all feel like they have a really good chance of being relegated. And they do. They really do. Even Blackburn in 17th, their running is horrendous. They've got Ipswich next, Sunderland, Southampton, Leeds, Coventry and Leicester all to play. A draw at Middlesbrough on the weekend was a start, but they really need to up their performances if they're to survive. I like the chances of QPR staying up under Cifuentes. Birmingham should be okay with their squad. Gary Rowett has been appointed as interim manager to replace Mowbray, who's off sick until pre-season. That will help. Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday's performances have picked up under new management, but they're certainly nowhere near safe. Stoke might be okay, but they're slap bang involved. Stoke fans will be rightly alarmed. Schumacher doesn't have the experience at this level to fall back on. Anything could happen during this run-in. I've said all of that with no confidence at all. You could tell me 2 of those teams from 21st to 17th get relegated this season, and I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. It's anyone's guess for who takes automatics, and it's a similar story in regards to who unwantedly calls League One their home next season. No idea.
Yeah, it's all to play for, definitely. I noticed you didn't really mention your home team, Plymouth Argyle, there, Sam, with too much... too many words devoted to them. So not going so well down there at the moment, is it? And they're the topic of your main bet on the pod this week.
No, Dan, it's really not. It's chalk and cheese compared to where the club was maybe a month or two into the championship season compared to where they are now. The bet is Plymouth Argyle to be relegated at 5.00 on Bet365, which is a tough one to say out loud. They are just 2 points off Huddersfield in 22nd, 3 points off Sheffield Wednesday in 23rd, like I said. Argyle owner Simon Hallett took another punt on a young coach in Ian Foster. He was the former England under 20 head coach. He was also working out in Saudi Arabia with Steven Gerrard. This was his first foray into club management. The fan base was promised a continuation from Steven Schumacher, the attacking front-footed brand of football supporters were so familiar with. It hasn't worked out. There are very few signs of Argyle taking the game to teams. Large sections of the fan base are up in arms. He's only been there for 12 games, by the way. He's not been there for long. The feeling amongst the supporters, I believe, other than the general underperformance from the manager and how he conducts himself, is driven by a few things. There's a little bit of fear there. It's taken Argyle so long to get back to the championship via League Two and the bleak days of administration. Dropping back to League One feels like a monumental step back, really, after being on the front foot and moving upwards for so long. It's also a little reactionary. Yes, Foster hasn't had long. He might be a brilliant coach in the future, but I'm not sure he's got the tools to get Argyle out of this current predicament. And the situation demands a swift decisive reaction given the output of the team on the pitch under his guidance. Staying in the league this year and subsequently selling assets for 15 plus million, it's game changing for this club, and that is obscene money to Plymouth Argyle. Cause for Foster's head rung out around Home Park on Saturday at home to Preston, and it's no surprise why. That was the second home game in three or so weeks where Argyle had failed to record a shot on target.
Yikes. I mean, from the outside, given Plymouth's record of signing talented young coaches, I'd sort of been expecting them to get a turnaround eventually, to the point where I actually backed them to beat Preston at the weekend. Not wisely, it turned out. I probably should have asked you to sign it off first before I make a bet. Did you manage to get to the match?
I wasn't at the game, no, but I had a few mates there and they said the Foster discourse was pretty bad from all four stands. This is an Argyle side who was so competent at home before Foster's arrival. They'd returned 24 points in 13 home games in the Championship before his appointment at the start of January, which stood as the sixth best home record in the division. That's playoff chasing home form. And Argyle have won once in six games at Home Park under Foster. They've conceded the most goals in that time and have only mustered five goals themselves. This is a side which used to be in at their free-flowing attacking best at Home Park. They were a match for anyone in their stride. And now Argyle haven't scored in their last four home games at Home Park, which is a world away from where we were a few months back. The new manager has come in and killed it, really. It's like he's flipped a switch. The football has regressed. It's a difficult watch. Argyle were turning down bids from Serie A for Morgan in January, Morgan Whittaker, and Foster somehow got him on the wing playing like Wes Morgan. Like it's just not the football that Plymouth fans that have Plymouth fans riled up. It's the way he carries himself, almost as if he's doing Argyle a bit of a favour by being in the dugout. Maybe that's just his demeanour, but he really doesn't help himself. His PR skill set is questionable at best, and that's half the job these days as a football manager, as the face of the club. And he speaks in press conferences like Argyle are nowhere near good enough to compete with the sides they're coming up against. He spoke about West Brom on the back of a 3-0 defeat at Home Park with, again, no shots on target. Like, they were prime Brazil, and this is the same baggy side that Argyle managed to get a 0-0 draw against at the Hawthorns. So he talks as if that's Argyle's level, and that really doesn't go down well with the majority. This is a team recently promoted from League One, yeah, but they should be having a go at least, and we know they're capable of doing so.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me a little bit of the situation with Michael Duff at Swansea. He was just a bad fit for the club, for the manager, and the timing. So yeah, we all know how that ended. So Sam, what's next for Plymouth Argyle? Foster's obviously come in to replace Schumacher, and the results have just fallen off a cliff, as you were saying. A few months of the season left. Is it time to give somebody else the job?
Look, Plymouth Argyle is a really well-run football club. Simon Hallett is a fantastic owner, but sometimes you need to put your hands up and say, you know what, I've probably got this one wrong. And if I was in Hallett's shoes, I'd send him packing, if I'm going to be honest. Being a head coach at Argyle is probably one of the safest jobs in the Football League. Hallett is the kind of owner that will put his arm around a young coach, allow mistakes, poor form, and even a relegation. This is the safest job in the Football League in that respect. I personally took this bet at 7.50 in a Championship article on Betting Expert. That was before this podcast even existed, all the way back in December. It's 5.00 now, and I still think that's value. The main worry for me, and it's the reason I'm going to play this with just half a unit as a podcast bet, is there is the potential for a new manager to come in, considering the displeasure and the backlash from Foster's short tenure. I'm sure Hallett would allow a relegation if he thought there'd be progress in the future. He is that kind of owner. But with the unrest amongst the supporters, I'm not as sure as I was on that front. And we've all seen what a new manager can do. It's that injection of belief, that new manager bounce, supposedly, that desire, that newfound desire to, that kind of galvanizes the squad and gives them enough to beat the job and clinch survival. That could be a factor here, so we need to bear that in mind too.
Yeah, not much change in the price in the last couple of months, despite what's been a pretty dire run of results.
That's exactly,
quite surprising. But I suppose bookmakers maybe hedging their bets in case that new manager comes in. So, Sam, put your cards on the table. Do you think he stays in the job for the run-in? Is he still in charge at the end of the season?
I don't know. Okay. I'm 50-50. If he stays, I think it's curtains for Argo in the championship. Players aren't playing for him. Home Park wants to place Argo, could be guaranteed a win here and there, is growing increasingly toxic. At 5.00, it's a hefty price that should, in my opinion, be a touch closer to Huddersfield at 2.75, QPR at 3.50, even Sheffield Wednesday at 1.72. Using those clubs as a yardstick, this is definitely value. And how should you play this from a betting point of view? I'd wait it out until the end of the international break, maybe a day or two before Plymouth take on Norwich in the first game back. If Foster is still there, Argo haven't pulled the trigger, take this bet. I've just seen, actually on Sky Bet, Argo 1.20 to stay up, which is wild. And if you have that anywhere near your bet slip, you need to seek some kind of medical attention. And I'm sure he is, but if Simon Hallett is a listener of the pod, please go and get Neil Warnock in for the run-in, or at least before I head up to Rotherham away at the start of April. That would be fantastic. So
cheers, give it Warnock till end
give
of
it
season.
To him, please.
Yeah,
fantastic. He'll do a job, definitely. Yeah,
he always does a job. And he's back on his yacht. So Sam's bets for this week in this international break is to stay well clear of the international matches, and instead look at the outrights. A couple of outright picks. You've gone for Ivan Toney to make the England squad. That's at 2.10. Full stakes, full single stake unless otherwise stated for the pod. And your other one is for Plymouth to get relegated from the championship. That's an outright, but you're just taking half a unit for that one.
Yeah, that's correct.
As ever, if you are going to be using some of the tips from the show, then please gamble responsibly, only betting what you can afford to lose. And if you've got some spare time, we've got a Q&A section on our Spotify feed. If people want to ask us any questions there on the Betting Expert Discord server, we may decide to answer them on the show next week. If you have even less spare time, then please just leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, because we are a brand new show and it helps so much with visibility. Let's wrap it up there. Thanks as ever to Sam Ingram.
Thank you very much.
And thank you from me. We'll be back next week.